Nexirus WYRM, Red Spot on the Retina. The English writer and public speaker David Icke came to distinction as an English footballer and BBC sports commentator. He also used to be a spokesman for the UK Green Party. After 1991, David Icke declared far and wide that the human race is secretly controlled by occult reptilian shapeshifters of Middle Ages Germany. Is a red spot on the retina of the eye symptomatic of a reptilian bloodline or a rare genetic disorder? A late-onset hereditary disease commonly shows its first symptoms during the ages of 30s or 40s and may include schizophrenia-like psychosis. At the level of David Icke's viewpoint, Rothschild Zionism is a political movement created and controlled by the House of Rothschild to establish a nation-state for Jews. But, as said by the Haaretz Opinion Israel News, the mantra of a Jewish state is full of highly problematic definite articles, and suggests a trans-historical claim to this land on behalf of an entire but undefined ethno-religious group the world over. Israel cannot characterize what a Jewish state is accurately. Is Jewishness by rights inherited maternally? There is no concord by any means in the Knesset as to what that entails. So, in effect, Palestinians are being asked to agree to something that even the Israelis cannot define with any degree of specificity. Hussein Ibish, how many times must the Palestinians recognize Israel? Netanyahu's new Jewish state mantra negates the fact that Palestinians recognized Israel more than 20 years ago. They're still waiting for Israel to recognize Palestine, Haaretz, March 13, 2014. The Rothschild nobility is a council of the Upper House of Lords, ratified by the British monarchy to watch over central reserve banks in the 53 Commonwealth countries, the United States, and Israel. It is a leading model crown corporation of the City of London, administered by the Bank of England. The cliché crown refers to the City of London, not the city named London or the British monarch. The City of London with its Lord Mayor is a financial oligarchic global business club that runs a city within a city. House of Rothschild in this report does not correspond to any essential person of our times, but a society of principalities and powers, or the rulers of distorted money markets throughout the centuries. Handing over constituents of contemporary Rothschild or Rockefeller traditionalism to the territory of monsters will not resolve an economic crisis. Heinrich Himmler visited the imprisoned Baron Rothschild in 1938. Elizabeth, Baroness de Rothschild, died in the Ravensbrück concentration camp. Savage Harvest, a 2014 book by veteran travel writer Carl Hoffman, made the realistic and well-argued case that young Michael Rockefeller died at the hands of Papuan cannibals who mistook his lone swim for a drifting crocodile in New Guinea. November 19, 1961. Two young men drift on an overturned catamaran along the coast of southwest New Guinea. 24 hours have passed since their motor died. One of the men, Michael Rockefeller, 23, the son of New York Governor and future Vice President Nelson Rockefeller and scion to one of the richest families in America, decides to swim 10 miles to shore. This is the last time Michael Rockefeller is seen alive. The official cause of death would later be listed as drowning. The prevailing theory was that he was consumed by sharks. They got one thing right, Michael was eaten. But it wasn't by sharks. Susanna Cahillan, How a Young Rockefeller Died at the Hands of Cannibals, New York Post, March 15, 2014. The practice of cannibalism may lead to the spread of a fatal brain disease called Kuru. A bleak skirmish to veil ghoulishness began before the Second World War. After the beginning of the 20th century, the U.S. Secret Service detected a number of rascals who were deliberately embedding larvae into America's agricultural crops. Perpetrators were caught with jars full of larva bodies and small tweezers used to implant fly parasites into fruits, beans, and vegetables. At that time, 1929, it was assumed that the misdeeds were committed to stage manage the market value of foodstuff. I found it to be general rumor that larvae had been planted, an eyewitness authority confirmed. Walter S. Bowen and Harry Edward Neal, The United States Secret Service, 1960. The process of Louis Pasteur's microbe theory was applied to U.S. institutions in those days, and an elite group of peers of the realm knew that their time was running out. It had been recognized that blood-borne parasites are transmitted in uncooked flesh such as beef, fish, and pork tapeworms. Now it was ready to appear that by eating a bean one could fall victim to the most abysmal leech. The well-known jumping bean contains the egg of a small moth. It is the moth's larva that makes the bean jump. The most bothersome bloodsucker recognized in theory is not a moth. Yet to this day, there persists a campaign of silence to suggest that it is. A mysterious privileged assembly had gained some extra time a century in fact while the regular serving dish of prison beans became the ideal cover-up for the overlooked flatworm of necrophilia and cannibalism. It would be treated like dandruff in every courtroom. They found the body in the early hours of the morning. The victim had been missing for several days. According to the autopsy, the child had been abducted and sexually abused. Teeth marks were found in parts of the body. It was one case among the many Amber Alerts reported throughout the world. Forensic odontology became the new dental science of identifying criminals by the teeth marks left in their victims' bodies. During the Middle Ages, a spineless dragon serpent was known as the WYRM, or Helminth. In modern times, the zoologist who pioneered studies in that field was E.C. Faust. Goethe's Faust, or Faustus, is the protagonist of a classic German legend who makes a contract with the devil. But E.C. Faust's 1949 Human Helminthology is a standard information book for physicians, sanitarians and medical zoologists. Research in the 1950s by Dr. Robley of Mexico City suggested that over a third of the world's population might be secondary hosts to flatworm larvae cysts in their bodies, unwittingly nursing a human helminth, dubbed Nexorus in this report. The main areas of cyst infection are typically the thighs and upper arms. The secondary host is the prey. Larva cystation in mammals is sometimes called the measle. Scientists in the former Soviet Union disclosed that the wings or fins of cross-hybrid parasites such as Nexorus are in fact enlarged suction cups functioning rather like lips that form a molecular bond to suck within the entrails of primary hosts. The primary host is the predator. The eerie life cycle of this parasitic WYRM has little to do with a jumping bean. It centers on human hemorrhage or bleeding and the raw ingestion of human blood containing the helminth cyst or measle. Persons with their immune systems exposed to a zone of infection may be contaminated by the so-called splatter effect. Whatsoever soul it be that eateth any manner of blood, even that soul shall be cut off from his people. Leviticus 7:27. The adult Nexorus helminth can mature to over 20 feet long within the body of the primary host. Additionally, it can reproduce in a genderless cycle known as binary fission, splitting itself in two slices as in Hydra immortality. Dried up segments, proglottids, of cuticle cells resemble serpent scales. The damaging psychological aspect of having a writhing tail, harlot riding a beast, is reflected in countless lingering legends referring to the primary host as a demon or devil. Due to the disagreeable makeup of this flatworm, primary hosts may not seek out medical attention. The first query to be asked is, what did you eat? And a truthful response could be the bloodthirsty receipt of overt profanity. Wherefore I say unto you, all manner of sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven unto men, but the blasphemy against the Holy Ghost shall not be forgiven unto men. Matthew 12:31. Consequently, the primary hosts may not ask for medical care but cover up instead and deal with it themselves. Some may gravitate toward magic societies that pay benefit to vice, such as the Church of Satan, or try to endorse the human helminth as an item of unhinged virtue, example Vermis Mysterious, or even the humorous flying spaghetti monster. One potential result is bestiality, octopus porn, a psychosexual pattern that may lead to disruption of the DNA code. The beast that thou sawest was, and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, and go into perdition, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was, and is not, and yet is. Revelation 17:8. In the Roman period, The cult of Abraxas was a classic illustration of how bloodthirsty gladiators agreed to put forward their array of symptoms as a hodgepodge of celestial magic or an enchanted emanation. Lacking the knowledge of zoologists, it was rather effortless for Rome's dogs of war to show themselves as satyrs. The pagan idol Abraxas was depicted as a soldier with two tails, a likely reference to a hydra beast, flow of 365 emanations, or the binary fission mating season of the Helminth Nexorus. Mischievously pleased, the man with the tail stood delighted by the brutal beast within, more ancient than the shark. Coiled around his ugly knee, a winged serpent writhed with loathsome scales, stinking horns, and filthy hooks the broken pieces of his soul. A stout cord reached far back in time, the archaic root of infectious disease and every way of death. 600 candlesticks burned their pale and sickly lights, smoldering shadows around the outline of the foul hierophant who wore his coat of lion's hair and goat's horn mask in a catacomb of skulls. Around him, letters were spread wide open, lost scrolls of long ago, before the fall of ancient Rome. The unsightly hierophant made the sounds of amusement and scorn, reading here and teasing there, but always laughing loudly to get rid of his grotesque humiliation and villainous embarrassment. Because the coming of the flatworm Satanas is like the growing of a mushroom fast, insidious, almost supernatural. In the morning, it will be done. In our age, doctors and psychologists are dismayed at a chaotic deep-rooted fad known as clinical vampirism. According to Bobby Joe O'Neill, a deputy coroner for the Charleston County Coroner's Office in Charleston, SC, the popularity of vampire media stars can lead some people, teenagers in particular, down a dangerous road. Clinical vampirism produces some of the most shocking pathological behaviors observed. It is one of the few pathological manifestations that blends myth and reality in dramatic fashion and contains many possible elements including schizophrenia, psychopathic and perverse features. According to reviewers such as Peter Levin, vampirism and sexual behavior are clearly linked. The love bite, which is considered normal and a common sign of affection, should be an interesting topic of discussion among sexual assault nurses examiners, SNESH, and other investigators who examine bite marks. For many teenagers who become involved in these activities, there can be confusion when myth and reality are blended. To investigate these cases thoroughly, we must first realize that the dilemma of clinical vampirism exists and where to turn for assistance. Paranormal writer Chris Holly recently conducted internet interviews with clinical vampires on various chat boards. She conversed with sanguine vampires who need to swallow blood in order to feel they can live normal, healthy lives. They feel that the blood gives them a certain energy that they do not get otherwise. I have read on the internet that this type of vampire will drink blood from other humans, or some may use animal blood, while others have been known to drink their own blood. Chris Holly was taken aback by what she discovered and wrote, "This subject was the most difficult I have ever had to investigate, deal with as far as interviews and write. I do not plan to write any follow-ups or to ever dig deeper into this subject matter. How does a Helminth parasite firstly enter the human bloodstream? How does its life cycle stop? Researchers today speculate if the AIDS virus wave actually did begin with the bite of an infected monkey. Consequently, it is not impossible that a Helminth infected its first human hosts during prehistoric times through the bite mark of a reptile, provided the appropriate Helminth larvae were present on the beak or fangs of the attack reptile. Komodo dragon plasma might serve as an antibiotic, Nature, 2017, whatever the case may be, that is what some of our oldest known narratives grant us the impression of. And the Lord God said unto the woman, What is this that thou hast done? And the woman said, The serpent beguiled me, and I did eat. Genesis 3:13. Perhaps the class Reptilia knows the fruit is just right to devour because the serpent bites first. Someplace in the prehistory of disease we acquired the flawed eating habits of cold-blooded tetrapods. In the course of waywardness our ancestors became cannibals. When NASA began its first missions, monkeys and dogs were launched into space prior to humans. Researchers who mull over extraterrestrials may also want to reflect on the possibility that aliens sent animals en route to the Earth before intelligent extraterrestrials would arrive here. What category of animals? Some leading astrobiologists are confident that helminth larvae and microbial diseases can survive in space under certain conditions. A panspermia premise suggested that octopuses came to Earth from space as frozen eggs. Stephen Hawking, the theoretical physicist and author of A Brief History of Time, 1988, warned in a 2010 commentary that alien life might try to conquer or colonize Earth. In Diseases from Space, 1979, the British astrobiologists Fred Hoyle and Professor Nadine Chandra Wickramasinghe developed a theory that many common diseases which afflict mankind have their origins in extraterrestrial sources. Some people claim that they have been visited by alien life and have been taken away. The first alien abduction claim to be widely publicized was the Betty and Barney Hill abduction in 1961. Others yet searched for a supposed process of how aliens may have incubated biological samplings in the bodies of abducted humans. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Luke 10:18. David Icke had lectured for some years on a privileged group of rogues who squander the planet's wealth. Icke portrayed them as reptilians, a position that might be relevant to this report, although helminthians is the accurate medical term. Shape-shifting men with tails are not the products of folklore but zoologist specifics according to the research of E.C. Faust and others. People with tentacles have been around for millennia and, as organized crime families are known to do, they initiate their own brood into the secrets of their envy. Under 1,000 human helminthus once sat above the law and swayed the entire world's destiny. For the past century they boldly sat behind a smart bean prank. But now they're out of time. Presently we can match the DNA of cysts found in a secondary host prey to the DNA of adult parasites found in a primary host predator. This is evidence for every courtroom. The charade of a Satanas worm may not eclipse the triumph of the human dream. And they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. Revelation 9:10. When uninhibited laboratories turned against established morality, they intentionally attacked the humanities. Physicists, chemists, and biologists all of a sudden made disturbing claims critical of subjects they had no schooling in. The humanities are academic disciplines that look at cultural studies such as anthropology, literature, philosophy, religion, art, and music. All of these branches of learning make intuitive citations to godliness and have been doing so since the origin of the written word. It is peculiar that skeptics usually call themselves humanists, presenting the mistaken sense that they are whiz kids in the subject of humanities. Nothing could be farther from the truth. 4. If skeptics got their way, ancient books of special insight would be consigned to the flames. It is perhaps a terrible thing to not be able to feel the quintessence of the human dream. It is even more awful when one or two leaders who hate established beliefs try to repress the creative forces of inspired reason. What set off the German measles, rubella, pandemic of 1962? Could a lack of sanitation have allowed a pathogen growing in space to be transported to Earth on the outer surface of an early V2 type rocket? The Institute of Astronomy at Cambridge has contributed greatly to the hypothesis of stellar nucleosynthesis and cosmology. For decades it has also investigated the likelihood of diseases from space. The details have to do with the incubation of microorganisms in comets that eventually cross Earth's pathway. Today more scientists are suggesting that viruses and bacteria responsible for undesirable infectious diseases might arrive at the Earth from space. They are searching for cometary bacteria that enter the Earth's atmosphere from space fallout. A recent experiment published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences has shown that a microbe can turn even more dangerous in space than on Earth. In that study, a bacterium particularly nasty for human salmonella was shown to become more virulent after just 83 hours of growing in space. Barry E. DiGregorio, Deadly Microbes from Outer Space, Discover, February 2008. The popular Men in Black film starring Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith farcically depict extraterrestrial Hydra beasts hiding in human bodies. They help to foster an Area 51 urban myth that government agencies supposedly carry out secret operations here on Earth in order to keep us safe from alien or space fallout infections. The Mind of Adolf Hitler, The Secret Wartime Report, 1972, is based on a World War II report by psychoanalyst Walter C. Langer, which probed the psychology of Adolf Hitler. It was the first ever analysis of the German leader's personality and psychopathology, compiled in 1943 by a team of Harvard psychologists for the Office of Strategic Services, OSS. As pointed out by Langer, if the Nazi Führer's hatred were translated back into personal terms, this would read, "My perversion is a parasite that sucks my lifeblood. I must rid myself of this pestilence." According to wartime character analysis reports, the German leader was suffering from a manic depressive schizophrenia-like psychosis, as observed in a number of late-onset hereditary diseases. Throughout his life and while Chancellor, Hitler would suddenly fly into terrifying rages, his face turning purple and blue, the veins on his forehead pulsating and swelling, until finally he would collapse on the floor and scream in an absolutely insane fashion. Ron Joseph, Ph.D. Following his World War I injuries, Lance Corporal Hitler was purportedly diagnosed with Epirite blindness in the missing medical dossier from the time he was admitted to the military hospital in Pazewalk near Stettin, Baltic Sea. However, it seems his records from that hospital treatment disappeared and the SS evidently killed everyone who knew about the case. The most depraved medical identity theft rips off a victim confined to bed due to illness or infirmity. Nazi miracle cure testimonials are likely distortions. A scrawny German soldier lies in a sickbay bed, allegedly suffering from blindness and mustard gas blisters. His face is bandaged with gauze. When the bandages are finally removed, he will only slightly recollect his earlier person. A new Hitler is about to be hatched, a changed man, with almost no resemblance to his past. His nose, forehead, and chin will seem permanently altered from inflammations caused by exposure to mustard gas. From now on, his voice will sound rough and croaking due to respiratory damage and coughing. He will wear dark glasses during the first period of recovery from his chemical loss of sight. He will have extreme difficulty recognizing his familiar friends or remembering old acquaintances. But he will be a world teacher in force, firstborn of the Illuminati, mindful of the miracle cure that guides him on his duty to lead Germany. The Burghof Villa was in the Bavarian Alps near Berchtesgaden, on the same rock face as the Eagle's Nest. It was a large country house following the example of the Chateau of Ermenonville. An extract from a French book of the 1700s, Essai sur la secte Illuminise, 1789 French edition, claimed that the huge Chateau of Ermenonville near Paris was one of the grand lodges of the Bavarian Illuminati movement. It belonged to the Marquis of Gerardin, who once put up the influential Enlightenment writer Jean-Jacques Rousseau. The famous eccentric alchemist Saint-Germain supposedly presided over it. The occultist Alliette said there were really two counts of Saint-Germain. What went on in the Burghof Villa was maybe revealed in Eyes Wide Shut, a 1999 drama film by Stanley Kubrick derived from the 1926 short story Traumnovelle, Dream Story, by Arthur Schnitzler. Dr. Bill Harford enters the teeming mask orgy of highborn revelry. Some of the masked participants are said to be powerful members of society. In the spacious chateau, people wearing crimson robes and Venetian carnival masks observe a satanic sex magic rite involving naked women standing in a circle, led by a hierophant who chants and taps the floor with his staff. As the cloaked people watch, women rise from the circle and select men in the audience, including Bill Harford. A woman informs Bill that he is in danger and urges him to leave, but he refuses. She is led away by someone else, after which Dr. Harford wanders through rooms wherein orgies are occurring. The Burghof Villa was connected to the Platterhof Hotel by a series of complex bunkers deep inside the mountain. The tunnel system was an exceptional piece of underground engineering with a subterranean engine that provided power to run the elevator. SS Gruppenführer Hermann Fegelein led the social circle. Oddly enough, Hitler's pet place was a cozy tea house built on the northern boundary of his Bavarian estate. In the Burghof, the adamant chancellor often had too many delights. Actor Gustav Weller would masquerade while he sought relief from carnal excess in his adjacent tea house. The pleasant walk to the tea house often became the scene for crucial political decisions. The Führer preferred to relax, and even nap, in the tea house itself, dreaming of washed-out shadows while surrounded by his irrational phobias. Aleister Crowley's most famed occult ritual was said to have been the sacred magic of Abramelin the Mage. Sardonically, Crowley was never able to finish that grimoire spellbook magical operation, which may last over a year. The sacred magic of Abramelin the Mage evokes a set of supplications that empower a magus to converse with sentry spirits and secure deliverance from demons. It requires a special roofed lodge to perform it. Ye shall choose an apartment which hath a window, joined unto the which shall be an uncovered terrace, or balcony, and a lodge, or small room or hut, covered with a roof, but so that there may be on every side windows whence you may be able to see in every direction, and whence you may enter into the oratory. In the which place the evil spirits shall be able to appear, since they cannot appear within the oratory itself. In the which place, beside the oratory towards the quarter of the north, you shall have a roofed or covered lodge, in the which and from whence one may be able to see the oratory. Translated by S. L. MacGregor Mathers, The Book of the Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Mage, 1898. Tied to a lodge chair, the adamant chancellor would now and then call up the old serpent, the Precambrian beast he named Iwas, more ancient than the shark. Is there a doctor in the house? More towels, cried a lodge butler. A magic belt of ectoplasm, said the lady of the lampshade. Clairvoyant emanations conjured from Abraxas' celestial outflow. You're full of flatworm, the doctor whispered and jostled for more elbow room. You're doing fine. Only 10 more feet to go. More towels, the butler nervously repeated again. In the heyday of seances, the 19th and early 20th centuries, ectoplasm oozed from various orifices of mediums, known as physical or materializing mediums. A bit of white cloth-like, very cloth-like, material oozing from someone's mouth, ears, or nose was considered strong evidence for the afterlife by those who think spirits are not dwelling in heaven or hell or some other distant gated community but are floating around the earth trying to give us material hints of their existence. Robert T. Carroll, Ectoplasm, The Skeptic's Dictionary. Ectoplasm was said to be a weird, spiritual material that flows out of any orifice and opening of a medium's body during a seance. But what led to that bizarre fashion of fraudulent ectoplasm in seances? In a play, the adamant chancellor bit into a sleeper's lips and left. He coughed on a chortle, and inhaled a slug of lover's blood. A mind-reading worm emerged in a perforated subclavian artery of the upper thorax, his chest. In his selfishness, he invited Nexorus into his heart. A blob in the brain is not the image most people have when someone mentions tapeworms. These parasitic worms are best known in their adult stage, when they live in people's intestines and their ribbon-shaped bodies can grow as long as 21 feet. But that's just one stage in the animal's life cycle. Before they become adults, tapeworms spend time as larvae in large cysts. And those cysts can end up in people's brains, causing a disease known as neurocysticercosis. Carl Zimmer, Hidden Epidemic, Tapeworms Living Inside People's Brains, Discover Magazine, May 15, 2012. Mind control by parasite sounds like the stuff of science fiction, but not only have scientists revealed that it is real across a range of animals including perhaps humans, they now even have fossil evidence suggesting it has taken place for millions of years. An unnerving variety of parasites have evolved the ability to control the brains of victims to help the parasites spread. For instance, the protozoan known as Toxoplasma gondii makes rats love cat urine so that it can spread among its feline hosts, and it may influence human culture as well, making people more prone to certain forms of neuroticism. Charles Q. Choi, Mind Controlling Parasites Date Back Millions of Years. Live Science, August 17, 2010.